AMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
In this edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll explore the role lawyers play in the legislative game as we hear from State Senator William T. Cadillac Smith. The legal profession finds itself entwined in one of the more complex issues still facing the legislature this session. What to do about soaring medical malpractice insurance premiums? Bill Gralty updates that story.
The battle between the doctors and the lawyers continued through the week, with several attempts being made at resolving the differences of opinion as to how to curb skyrocketing malpractice premiums. The Senate introduced a bill which included a $250,000 cap on awards for pain and suffering. A compromise bill sponsored by the Assembly and backed by Governor Cuomo does not include that cap. Doctors like James Stryker, an Albany-area orthopedic surgeon, say the cap is essential.
A cap on pain and suffering. The Commissioner of Health just told us that out of the awards in the last year, over 50%, in excess of 50% of the amount of money that was awarded for this vacuous term, pain and suffering. In other words, it's a term that, you're transmuting a subjective complaint into a monetary award.
But Justin Vigdor, the president of the New York Bar Association, says the cap is not the answer and is unfair.
Well, we have had the position that that is not fair to people who have been injured and maybe permanently lives ruined by that type of malpractice. Now, of course, we don't see any fairness in saying that a person who is rendered into a vegetable state by a medical act should be capped, while someone who's rendered in that state by being hit by a tractor trailer should not be capped.
In the ongoing debate, which pits doctors against lawyers to a certain degree, Dr. Stryker says lawyers should shoulder some of the blame.
Well, we think lawyers are a major part of the problem because trial lawyers happen to control the state assembly. And the speaker of the state assembly, who controls a large bulk of bound state assemblymen, his firm is a malpractice firm. And it's almost to their benefit not to enact prudent and cogent legislation.
However, Bar Association President Vigdor defends the members of his profession.
We have in our association 45,000 lawyers. I would say that the overwhelming majority of them probably never saw a medical malpractice case. They include real estate lawyers, corporate lawyers, and every other kind of lawyer. And as far as those who do deal in malpractice, we've got lawyers who represent plaintiffs, but we've also got lawyers who represent hospitals and doctors. So we want to see a balanced solution. We don't want to see the tort system destroyed to get at a problem and throw the baby out with the bathwater.
At week's end, signs point toward a vote next week on the assembly plan, the one endorsed by Governor Cuomo, the one that does not include the cap on pain and suffering. Whether the Senate will go along with it and drop the cap remains to be seen. Some sources have indicated that Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson has pledged privately to approve passage, but a spokesman for Anderson says no deal has been made. Meanwhile, another round of premium increases is due to take effect on the 1st of July, and the protest by doctors has been widening. But even if the legislation passes, which it almost certainly will, the problem will continue. A spokesman for Assembly Speaker Stanley Fink says a study group is looking into major reform of malpractice. While Fink would prefer to wait to see what that group comes up with, he reportedly realizes the nature of the crisis and now will go along with legislative action, but only if it does not include the cap on pain and suffering. This is Bill Gralty in Albany.
There was further evidence this week that the Family of New York is this country's largest mutual admiration society. Here is Dr. Lee Merengoff of the Marist College Institute for Public Opinion.
This past week, the Marist College Institute Institute for Public Opinion released the results of a statewide poll on two issues, Governor Mario Cuomo's performance in office and whether voters in New York State want the legal drinking age raised from 19 to 21. The results of the survey were reported during the week on this radio station. Basically, Governor Cuomo is enjoying his highest level of popularity since entering office. Close to 70% of state voters believe that he's doing either an excellent or a good job, and 3 out of 4 want him to run for re-election as governor in 1986. Regarding the drinking age, 75% of New York State voters approve of raising the drinking age from 19 to 21. The issue did not make it through the legislature last year, despite the overwhelming support of residents around the state, but this year the climate has been different. First, President Reagan has indicated that states who do not have this 21-year-old purchase law would jeopardize significant numbers of federal highway transit funds. And second, Governor Cuomo has announced that this issue of raising the state drinking age was his top priority for this session of the legislature. For Cuomo, its passage is a major victory. His supporters will argue that it reinforces his image as a leader for the state on human life issues. I think the irony politically is that President Reagan provided, at least in part, some incentive for the legislature. Whether it would have passed with just Cuomo's strong support remains a question. Members of the legislature are certainly quick to realize the potential political fallout from the loss of millions of federal dollars to New York State. Governor Cuomo, to his credit, took the lead on this issue last year, and now, with the help of federal pronouncements, the legislature has stepped in line. So the governor has accomplished his major legislative priority for this session. And as far as public opinion goes, the enactment of this law is one that has strong public support. I'll be reporting more on our survey on this program in 2 weeks. In the meantime, for the Legislative Gazette, this is Lee Marengoff at the Marist College Institute for Public Opinion in Poughkeepsie.
If you wanted to, or if you were somehow able to eliminate lawyers from the face of the earth, there are those who would argue that the New York legislature would cease to function. After all, many of the legislators are lawyers. Legislative and committee staffs are peopled with lawyers. Many lobbyists are lawyers. There are others who might argue that the legislature would do a whole lot better without lawyers. One of those people is Deputy Majority Leader William T. Cadillac Smith. Senator, you're a man I've always admired because you speak your mind. And one of the things that you speak your mind the best on is the question of the relationship between lawyers and legislators. Do you think this is something we have to be aware of?
Well, I think you must be aware of it when you have almost 50% of the state senators being lawyers and a high percentage in the assembly. I think it's a very important issue.
And somebody has to be the conscience of the legislature on this matter.
Well, I do say that no lawyer ever came forward with a lawyer registration bill. We have been probably the only state in the nation that did not register lawyers and did not have them pay a fee. And nobody did it, so I did it. I did it as a result of a letter from a constituent once who said, can this be true that they're not registered? And so I looked it up and found it was true. And so I immediately put a bill in, and it was in for several years before I could get the attention of the leadership, which had to address the issue and declare that it was their opinion that the lawyers should be registered in this state and pay their share for disciplinary proceedings. And also, we did involve that a security fund for those people who were just honest lawyers who had taken the client's funds.
Okay, let me go back. You said you had to get the leadership's attention. The old saying about the fellow who made the mule go by slapping it in the head with a 2x4, first you had to get his attention. Is that what it took?
Well, it took quite a bit. I remember on several occasions when there were increased fees for the other professions, which we do occasionally, I would get up on the floor of the Senate and read the lists of those who had their fees increased and question whether or not the lawyers were included. And of course, they weren't, and I knew they weren't, but nobody would respond. But It was a rhetorical question, and I did this a few times, which got the attention of some people at least. And I think the general public was not aware that they didn't pay their fair share. And so finally, I think I kind of embarrassed them into it.
Well, admit us into the back cloakrooms of the Senate Club. You go off the floor. You've just suggested heresy that lawyers pay fees like everybody else. Did you get a little? Kidding? Good-natured kidding?
Oh, sure. They considered immediately that I was a lawyer's enemy and their critic and everything else. Really, I wasn't, except on this particular issue. I recognize, of course, the power of the legal profession here, but I also thought that was only fair. It would help their image. I mean, if they paid their fair share, I said, fellas, you just got to pay your fair share. Everybody else does. Why are you exempted? And they grinned and smiled, and that's about all I could get out of them. But finally, they acceded that I was right, and we did get the bill out of committee and pass it in 1981, the first one.
Now, did you hear from the bar associations?
Well, the bar association we satisfied with a security fund. I don't think the Bar Association would have approved the disciplinary funds, that is, the original registration fee, which is only $40 every 2 years, had we not brought to their attention that really they needed a security fund to take care of those people who the lawyers had stolen their money.
So what we had here is a situation which you were going to use some of the money to discipline lawyers, if I get it right, and some of the money was going to be used to help people who had been whose money had been absconded by lawyers.
Right. And this brought out on the floor, and one of the senators said, Senator Smith, are you inferring that there are crooked lawyers? I said, sir, I did not infer there were crooked lawyers, but let me read the list of the people who have claimed that they've been gypped by the lawyers, and the money is gone, and what are we going to do about it? And so that answered that question, I thought. And so we found out that really there were more people out there who were deserving of some funds than we had money in the fund for. Right now there are $9 million in claims by clients that the lawyers have taken their funds and stolen them. So that's one of the reasons at the present time I'm asking that biennial registration fee of $50 be raised to $100. And I don't think that's even enough.
Now, I hear they're giving you a tough time on the $100 now, and that's only every 2 years, so it's really just
right.
$50 a year.
Right. Oh, sure they are. I expected it, and I think the lawyers and the Senate get their kicks out of picking on me because I'm not a lawyer, and they nitpicked the bill, and they've done as they did the original bill, Nick picked it for an hour or two on the floor, and I took a list, and I said, well, gentlemen, I'll take your suggestions into consideration. I did some of them. I amended the bill, but I said, when I come back, you're going to do the same thing over did, and they did, but eventually it passed 47-7 or 8 in the Senate and went to the Assembly and was passed over there. So, but I think that they resist to the last imposing this fee upon them, and also there is an inference that there are dishonest lawyers in this thing, because we do have the client security fund in there, which will pay these people back, and we paid several $1 million back already to these people, but we still can't pay the total amount. We got a $25,000 limit. The other day we had a case up in Wayne County where a lawyer took $200,000 from an elderly lady funds who was in a nursing home, and the first time they found out the money was gone when he was responsible for paying the nursing home fees, and they didn't get the money, so they inquired, and the guy had stolen the whole $200,000. The guy only got 5 years probation. I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on in this state.
Why did he only get 5 years probation? I can't help pursuing this a bit.
Well, he comes under the disciplinary proceedings, which are run by lawyers under one of the appellate divisions, and so I suppose they were sympathetic to one of their kind. But to me, if a guy had stolen $100 out of a grocery store till, he'd probably go into jail. This guy got probably more than $400,000 when you get down to it. I mean, we don't know the total amount the guy has stolen.
Now, Assemblyman Mel Miller, he says he didn't subscribe to this statement, but he once told me that the Senate takes care of the doctors and the assembly takes care of the lawyers. He cited that old quotation. If that's the case, how does that all work out in what we're talking about?
Well, I think really the legal profession finally decided that they better accede to my suggestion that they be made honest, and I think this only makes them equal to doctors. I mean, in fact, doctors pay a higher fee than the lawyers do at the present time, except for the security fund, which is certainly was done with the approval of the attorneys here, the Bar Association. I think it takes a lot of the load off their back on responsibility, but it still does not cover enough to pay everybody back that who had their funds stolen.
Now, Senator, far be it from you to comment on the other house, but what I really meant by this question was, do you find more pro-lawyerism in the Assembly than you do in the Senate, even in the Senate?
Well, not being in that familiar with the Assembly, I guess it's probably true, but I'm not sure whether that's true or not. What Mel Miller said, maybe he said is true. I expect he would, being over there.
Well, let's take a look for a second about your idea, this idea of the security fund, Senator. That's very interesting, if a lawyer does something bad to a client, there's this fund to dip into to get something out. Now, the state, and I swear to you, I did not come in here with this loaded intention, but here now we have the same sorts of proposals that have happened in other states for doctors, for malpractice insurance. They mess up, there's a big pool of money, and instead of the insurance company handling it, the state has a pool of money which they handle out. Now, I know Speaker Fink has some kind of an idea about setting up a special company to do that, but what about the idea of the same kind of fund for doctors that exist in the case you're talking about for lawyers?
Well, for some unknown reason, stealing money is not considered malpractice. I don't understand it, but I assure you that doctors can be, and they do carry malpractice insurance, which is a very small fee.
You mean lawyers?
Lawyers do, yes. Yeah. And why the stealing the funds is not considered malpractice, I don't know. Of course, they can be disbarred if they're caught at it, but it's not covered by their malpractice insurance, so that keeps their malpractice insurance very low. And so the only way we have to make these people whole who have had their money stolen is to set up the security fund. And it's working very well, but we also find that there's a great number of people. There's $9 million out there in claims right now, and we believe there are probably more than that once people become aware that they can apply for this funds out of this security fund.
Well, the question then is, would a similar idea for doctors be appropriate?
Well, I don't think they could afford that. I mean, I think it has to be covered by an insurance policy.
Okay, let's go back to the central thesis here that we're working on, and that is lawyers' influence in the legislature. Now, I know you're famous for jogging them about this. How do you see it working out? Do you see that there are special places that the public really has to be very aware that there are a lot of lawyers in the legislature?
Well, I think generally the lawyers are more able to handle with the legal side of it, like drawing bills and so forth, although personally as a non-lawyer, I hire a lawyer. We have a system down here where we can get the bills drawn for us. So that the lawyers tend to chair the most important committees. You'll find that the Finance Committee is chaired by an attorney, and I'm sure that Ways and Means is. You take the Codes Committee, that's a given that they would chair that. The Judiciary Committee, and some of the more important committees, and therefore that they can wield a tremendous amount of influence as chairman of that committee. Now, I don't say it's all bad, but I'm saying that you have to be look at it with a sort of a jaundiced eye when you have over 50% of the, or about 50% of the senators being attorneys, that they look at it from a different point of view than many of us who are not attorneys.
Now, Senator, I'm going to put it to you here. I want to ask you this. Lawyers in the legislature, we have too many graduates from law school. There are, in fact, a lot of people who never get to practice. I heard up to 50%. In other words, there isn't enough work to go around. And so I have a question for you. Is there a temptation in your mind? Is one of the things you look for the slightest temptation on the part of those lawyers who are sitting in the legislature to write themselves in and their responsibilities into more bills, to make more work?
I I don't know as I could prove that. I can't tell you that for sure. I think there are some bills that have to do with attorney's fees. They're not too many, but there are a few having to do with the states, perhaps, and so forth. And so they may or they may not. I guess I can't, as an expert, and I've never really researched that part of it.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about something like writing in that, you know, we have the situation now where we find somebody gets a $1 million award for a malpractice suit, and the lawyer gets a third of that. A lot of people are incensed about that.
Well, as you know, under the medical malpractice new bill that we just introduced, was just introduced in the Senate, it limited to 20% for contingency fee, which is really causing a lot of screams in the lawyers because presently they can get 30 to 50%. I gather there's nothing in the legal, in the law about whether or not their percentage is prescribed by law. It may be under the court system may decide whether that's a fair amount or not, but I don't know.
But isn't that just what you're talking about, an inherent example of where there's a potential, at least, conflict of interest?
No, I think there is. I think there's a lot of potential problems with the surrogates, with wills and so forth. The surrogate judges appoint their lawyers, and that's a very important position in some places, and lucrative in some places, and that's very political in many, many parts of the state, and perhaps all. So that there, once you get a will given to you by a surrogate judge, you've got a certain responsibility, you're going to get paid. So it's a familiarity. It's a sort of fraternal organization, I guess.
Now, you're a farmer, right?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Okay. So I want to know, do you like lawyers?
I like lawyers as friends. Sometimes their profession, their actions as attorneys I don't like, and they seem to be rather, they look down upon the other people who are not lawyers, and I guess maybe they have a right to do. They've been trained to do this, and they're trained to try to, they have a responsibility of protecting their clients, and the ones that I've always have protected me. I don't know if they've always protected other people's clients, though. But I do know they're good and bad lawyers like there are any good and bad farmers. I mean, they're dishonest farmers, and they're dishonest in any profession. Whether there's more in the legal profession or not, I question, but they do have bad apples there. Otherwise, we wouldn't need this client security fund.
There's a famous line from Shakespeare which says, the first thing we have to do is kill all the lawyers. Now, I think that's a little bit much, but do you think there are too many lawyers in the society?
Well, I understand that there are going to be 1 million lawyers in this country by 1990. I think that's a surplus of them. And, of course, they tell the story about there was a little country town in the South, and a lawyer, for lack of any place else to go, went there. And so he started going, and pretty soon he got another lawyer to come in there. So immediately they started suing everybody and each other and going to town, so it created a tremendous amount of business. I suspect this could go on throughout the whole nation if we get too many lawyers, because they will be very litigious, and we're going to have a lot more lawsuits than we presently have. Now, it's not up for me to decide whether they're proper or not to bring these court cases, but it's going to happen, and it's going to cost the public a lot of money.
W.T. Smith.
So W.T. Smith is keeping an eye on the lawyers in the legislature. As these programs have gone on, I've always told you that W.T. is a remarkable man. That's because he's one of those rare birds in the legislature who, when he can, does the right thing. Smith knows that the legislature is a natural habitat for attorneys. There are several reasons for this, in my opinion. Lawyers, like insurance persons, are able to get away from their practices for a few days to get to Albany for a legislative session. In other words, they're in command of their own time. Then, too, the way the system is constructed, lawyers are natural beneficiaries of being legislators. One tends to hire a lawyer who is also a legislator because being elected has status connected with it, and there's always the hope that when you hire the lawyer who also happens to be a legislator, that some of that status will rub off in your favor on your case. There are many reasons for this, not the least that a judge in a case is very likely to be paying some special attention to a legislator who may one day vote on his or her judicial budget, or who may be in a position to help promotion possibilities in the state court system or as Kojak says, like that. And, as W.T. pointed out in his remarkable interview, lawyers hold most of the key positions in the state legislature, as chair people of the key committees like Codes and Ways and Means and Judiciary, to say nothing of the important speakership and majority leader's position in the Senate. And I won't even bother to mention the chief executive of the state, who, as we all know by now, is a lawyer's lawyer. So, as W.T. Smith points out, it is not all that surprising to learn that if they had their way, lawyers in the legislature would have been the one profession that did not have a registration law or a fee to back that up. When W.T. the farmer had the unmitigated nerve to ask them to come up with $25 a year the first time and now $50 a year, you could have heard the screams all the way to Sacramento, which is, after all, a long way off. But W.T., being the salesman that he is, was able to convince the lawyers that it was not a good idea to call attention to themselves and that their special place in the legislative system was secure. And in my opinion, W.T. probably really helped the lawyers rather than hurt them. There is a trick in the legislature where most of the bills are passed on what is called a non-controversial calendar, meaning that the bills have been agreed on in advance by both parties. The way to kill a bill is to ask for what is called a slow roll call. A slow roll call means that every senator has to answer yay or nay instead of the short roll call in which only four names are called. Well, on W.T.'s lawyer registration bill, when a wise guy asked for a slow roll call in order to get Smith to lay aside his bill, one of W.T.'s allies turned around and said, yes, but the five guys who are calling for the slow roll call shouldn't be lawyers. Ah, well, you had to be there to understand the joke. Anyway, the people are well served by W.T. Smith, Republican of Big Flats, who remembers who he is and who he's serving and why. And that's because he stays in touch with his constituents. And how does he do it? By phone, of course. In other words, W.T., phone home. That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for another look at state government and politics. Bill Gralty produces and edits this program. Rick Lepkowski is associate editor. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC, Box 13,000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.